Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Did you guys know that Wood Talk has a YouTube channel? Yeah, we didn't either until Margaret reminded us. About 4 to 5 years ago, we would record the show live on YouTube and those episodes stayed there for tens of people to enjoy. But we stopped doing live shows and the YouTube version went away with it. Well, now it's time for a little experiment. As something of a test, we're going to post an enhanced version of the podcast to YouTube, meaning not only do you get to see our faces, you also get to see some images and other visual aids that are relevant to the things we're talking about. Look, guys, I understand your apprehension about looking at Matt and Shannon too long. I mean, ugh. But that's why we're adding other things, so that there's more to look at, and hopefully that'll make it worth your while to watch instead of just listening. We'll keep the whole Matt and Shannon tough to look at thing to ourselves, okay? Now, I'm going to be honest. We're going to look at the view count and engagement and see if this is really worth our time to do this. So if you even think you want this to happen and you want it to continue, you need to head on over and watch it and just let us know. Otherwise, we're going to assume that this was a dumb idea and Margaret will be sad. You don't want to make Margaret sad, do you? Anyway, just search for Wood Talk on YouTube or go directly to youtube.com/woodtalk.
Welcome to Wood Talk, turning woodworkers into knitters since 2007. Here are your hosts, Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
Well, well, well. It's episode 544. It's good to see everybody. Well, well. On today's show, we're talking about what does credibility look like in 2023? Poor filling, getting shop time when you've got kids, and finishing only one side of a board. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before January 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you absolutely can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. We'd like to thank Scott Miller, Christian Horsager. I'm going to go with that. Chris Jacobson and Jacob Grenet. You like that? That's pretty good, huh?
Okay, for anyone who isn't Jacob, the name is Green, but
it's got a little E on the end.
That's
there,
fine.
You know? You make it a little more fun. You're welcome. Enjoy your name upgrade.
Classic. Classic Cremona. No, my favorite. My favorite part of the show.
My favorite part is I can see your face and your expression when I said that. It was
in the back of my mind. The funny I'm thing thinking, is, these are easy names today. That's no fun. No.
Yeah. Yep, he'll make it fun. There are times where I talk to other people who podcast, and I think a lot of folks do video like as a routine thing. It's just part of what they do. That's how they see each other and they gauge each other's reactions. And they can't believe that we don't see each other. Like our timing is pretty good and how we flow through the show. If you're listening to this show, you may not know that we do not see each other. And for the first time in years, we decided to start to capture the video just to see if it's worth uploading. It's probably not because it's just our faces, but we might do something with the video. But now we can see each other. And I got to tell you guys, it's throwing me off, actually. Yeah. I don't want to see you guys.
There is that.
What I'm doing is, no, what I've been doing is I cover you with another window so I don't have to see
you. I put the notes on you guys.
So I don't know.
I was going to say, the show notes are kind of always up when we do this. Yeah. So I've had to like pull it off to
right,
the side.
Right, so we don't have to actually, yeah. The seeing your lips move does not do me any favors. I mean, not during the show. I mean, maybe other times it might. Oh, in, no. You know, in the evening.
Sugar lips.
After a nice dinner. Oh, hey, totally off topic. Oh, and it's a dining table episode anyway. So, Matt, do you remember? I'm going to take you back to Atlanta, Workbench Con, Pirates Boil. Yes?
Yeah, it was good.
Can't forget it, right?
I'll do it again.
Guess what I found here in Missouri? A place.
They got one of those there?
A boil place, I swear, dude, from the interior that looks like the inside of a pirate ship to like everything you could ask for. We found this place that's just 10 minutes from work. I've been there twice in the last week and my, right, I've been on the toilet as a result, but
is this the invitation for me to come and have dinner?
Yes.
Sometime?
You got
to
come out here. It was
boil place.
It's so good. It's so good. Oh my gosh. Anyway. So I'll tell you what, for all the things I don't like about Missouri, oddly enough, the one complaint I do not have is the food. The food here on all the things that I really, really like has been fantastic. So there's my review of Missouri.
A fun, like, is there a Cajun place? Because that was our place in Denver.
Still looking for like a straight up Cajun, you know, like a good po'
boy. That was good too.
Yeah, that was pretty good in Denver. That was actually one of my favorite things in Denver. But I like the food here better just overall. So there's that. I'm going to leave a Yelp review for Missouri if that's possible.
For Missouri, just as a whole.
The people and the countryside, not so much, but the food, thumbs up. No, just kidding. People here are
more than just a rest stop on the way to Kansas.
Right. You don't just have to pass through. There's actually some stuff you could do there. Okay. Well, dining table episode. It means we grab a topic and we try to hash it out best we can. A lot of times it's not specifically woodworking related. And that's no exception here today. So we actually had two options, two great questions from Gary and Thomas. We're going with Gary's question. And I think next time we'll do Thomas's question. So let me read this here. He says, first off, the three of you create a wonderful show, infusing lighthearted humor with insightful tips and tricks from your vast experience. Excuse me. Now, to the heart of my comment, a couple of topics have come up in the more recent episodes, content creation and influencers, aka tool shills. The average rowdy redneck DIY hobbyist does not understand, and quite frankly, doesn't care to understand, that content creation is an art as well as an ends to the mean. It is business. It is income. You guys know that and live it. On the topic of influencers, especially regarding tools, it all comes down to one word: credibility. There's been a new wave of these influencers who have crossed the line into full-time content creation, but have zero credibility with regard to actual woodworking. Kind of like the blind leading the blind. They do develop a loyal yet highly segmented audience, kind of like a fraternal organization, but 99.9% of the content, in quotes, they produce is directly stolen from credible sources. I.e. Mark made a comment on the show as well as on YouTube about using tung oil cut with citrus solvent, D-limonene, I believe, as a much better alternative than mineral oil. Literally less than a week after that was published, some influencer grabbed it and made it his own. I get it. This happens all the time, but if there was one thing that drives me nuts, it's narcissism. Fortunately, you guys are the real deal, have earned your spot through time. I could ramble forever about social media, content marketing, etc., but we'll reserve my comments for a later time. Oh, by the way, he did say he was medicated when he wrote this email. I want to add that in there.
Good to know.
Just a teaser. He says, just a teaser. This is interesting, and this is a little ominous here. There will be an upheaval coming sooner than later in the social media space that will be driven directly by advertisers and the further restrictions on... You're shaking your head, Shannon. What is this, P2?
It's all privacy restrictions. I mean, GDPR, what is that?
Yeah, I know what that is now. But what's the P2?
It's just a follow-on to GDPR, which is okay. Kind of making it even more regulated, more stringent, and more than anything. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's all, you know, it's like Google saying that they're not going to allow cookies. And so pixel tracking and things like that, all of I mean, there's no doubt that in order to advertise the way it's done now, there's a serious privacy violation. There's no way to be on the internet. You know, I don't care how thick your tinfoil hat is. People are following you. Your phone is listening to you. So this is further stricter regulation that's going to prevent basically all of it. So yeah, the pendulum is swinging
the number of times. Well, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. The number of times that I've had a conversation with someone and not a Google search, haven't been searching anything, and it could just be coincidence, but the number of times I've had a conversation about an unrelated thing that I normally would not be talking about shows up as an ad for a comparable product in my Facebook feed is like, it's happened at least a dozen times. And every time I'm just like, wait a minute, did I search for it? Did I do like something that I'm not remembering, but it's too much to be coincidental. But also I like to think that when my phone says it's not recording me, that it is not recording me. I'm not a tinfoil hat person, but there's some interesting coincidences that happen.
Well, just the fact that like my GoPro camera has that like pre-record function, like, so you don't miss the kid's goal.
It's recording.
It's actually recording right now. Yeah. It's just, you know,
it obviously
it's
is
just dumping the footage after whatever, 30 seconds or whatever. It's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn my GoPro camera away from me right now. Yeah. I don't.
Just in case, just put it in your pocket or something. So I think the thing I wanted to break down here is an interesting topic about credibility. Because let's take back, you know, a little bit of a history lesson here. When I first started, as one of the first people doing this kind of thing online, you know, I'd like to think that I was pretty honest about the fact that some of the stuff I was learning for the first time or learning it very recently. But the difference for me was this library of content didn't exist yet online. So I was going back to classic sources. I was going back to books. I was going back to DVDs. And even if it was something I just recently learned, I learned it from a very, you know, heavily vetted resource, and a lot of times fine woodworking or something like that. But no one had put this information into this format in this location. So it was like, well, if no one else is going to do it, I'll do it. So it's a little bit of a different situation where now you may have someone who just learned something for the first time and maybe competitively is trying to make their version of it so that they get the views that they're looking for. And you also have a situation where many people stopped researching past 2006. So everything they know is built upon information someone learned from someone else on YouTube who learned that from someone else on YouTube. And that's a great way for that little party trick you do where you have a sentence that you say, and you whisper it into someone's ear and they whisper it into the next person's ear and it goes around the room. And by the time it comes back, it's not the same sentence. And I think that's to a degree what could be happening, certainly on YouTube. That's very different now. But I just kind of want to put that out there that this was the secret to my success. If I'm being completely honest, was I wasn't incredibly experienced as a woodworker. I was just getting started as a woodworking instructor. I started to teach classes just because I had a little bit of a knack for teaching. And my woodworking was growing as I was learning, but it was just simply, there was nothing else at the time. So it gave me that opportunity to do it at the time, or I guess was kind of my permission to myself to be able to teach this because there was no other alternative. So I may as well step up and do it. So I don't know. I mean, you guys have thoughts or gut reactions to this whole credibility thing and how you convey what may be new information that you received, but you're now conveying it to an audience, like responsibility that comes with that?
I mean, I just have to laugh because like you said, this is the same thing. Listeners, people like Adria who've listened to the whole catalog will remember the fine woodworking vetting debacle.
I was hoping someone would bring that
Ace's
up.
Ace's Apology Tour when he came on our show. I loved that title, Ace's Apology Tour. I mean, this was like 2012 or 11
that's a
or
long
something.
Time ago.
It was the same boat where I can't remember that. I doubt, knowing the guys at Fine Woodworking, I doubt they called anybody out by name, but it was this whole idea that they, Fine Woodworking, as the vetted establishment, the guys with lots of experience, were saying that all these people online have no experience and are basically one day more experienced than the people they're teaching. And that's, you know, compounding errors, I think is what they actually titled the episode. And I remember at the time, you know, we took exception to it. I mean, in our lighthearted, poking fun kind of way. But I can remember people actually blogged back then. The bloggers went nuts. Like, they were furious.
This was 2012, by the way, 2012.
Yeah, I thought it was somewhere around then. It was early on in this show's life, but people got really upset that, you know, how dare you put yourself on a pedestal and you're therefore vetting everybody you put in the magazine. So it goes two ways, right? I mean, kind of like our social media discussion on our previous episode, where it's good and it's bad. You know, I do think that if you, let's face it, I think content creation, good content creation, is a lot about presentation and your ability to be comfortable in front of a camera and to teach or entertain or whatever your personal idiom is. And then there's others that are just terrible at it, you know? And I think, Mark, I think you and I can certainly relate to this. The people that like were doing media at the time, some of them were terrible. Like, there was just like, they were making things either way too complex, or they just weren't explaining it in a proper way, or they had so many years of teaching in classroom settings, and then they were told to stand in front of a camera. I mean, some of those Lee Nielsen videos that are still for sale, some of those are really bad. You know, great content because it's taught by Chris Bexford or Larry Williams or something like that. But it's like, oh my God, shoot me.
Yeah. It's forgivable because it's a master of craft, but not necessarily a master of presentation.
And I think what happened, and certainly I blame Mark for this in a good way, you know, Mark stopped taking it so seriously. He was poking fun at himself and joking around and, you know, it wasn't such a big deal. And you could teach about how to use a joiner while cracking jokes or wearing a blonde wig or something like that. You know, that was,
well, maybe not anymore.
Okay. Fair enough. How times have changed. That and the long hair around the joiner is a bad idea from a safety perspective, but
yeah, that's, I'm just talking about the safety. Sure. That's all.
But this was an opportunity for those of us that maybe we had one day more experience than I've done this four times. And now I'm teaching it, but I wasn't teaching it. I was just conveying the steps, and I was hopefully capturing it with different camera angles and showing how it was done. And I think the real drive when we started, Mark, was slowing it down and showing truly here's how this project is built. And there's no like cut to commercial and come back and, you know, here we are, you know, 7 days later, that type of thing. That was the big change for us. So now to come full circle and to have, you know, I mean, the content format has changed so many times, from long form to shorts, literally, to, you know, reels, to back to long form, to all kinds of, now it's not education, now it's entertainment. What are you trying to do? I think as long as you're not showing something that's going to hurt somebody, and frankly, you're doing a decent job of it, you know, whether that's really educational, like I got a lot out of this, or I was entertained, who cares? You know, I'm certainly not going to say that guy shouldn't be talking about this because I have more experience. Cause now I'm in that position, you know, 15 years down the road. Now I can say, well, heck, I've got quite a bit of experience in woodworking. So therefore
suddenly you're on the other side of that.
But I hope to think that I'm not bothered by that. Like, there's a lot of people out there who are certainly getting a lot more views than I am, you know, who are touching on a topic that I did 8 years ago or 1 year ago or 1 week ago. Doesn't matter, as long as they kind of do it in their own way, which is what I think is the good thing about the internet, is that whole tribe idea. You know, you define the people you relate to and you become a fanboy or whatever of that particular person. And you're always saying, hey, why don't you do a video? I get emails all the time. I wish you would do a video on this. And I'm thinking, God, like 17 people did that last week, but they want to hear.
Or worse yet, you already did it.
Generally,
and it's 10 years old.
Two and three times, actually, I've already done it. Yeah. You know, then I usually respond that way. And they say, yeah, but I want to see you do it. And then I'm like, okay, you need a life, but okay, sure. Well, you got to raise your standards, boy.
You're so nice.
Yeah. But the trick is, these days, I think popularity can be confused with credibility. Just thinking in terms of my kids, and I'll watch what they watch. And the way that people come across, especially on YouTube in particular, my kids will walk away thinking that that's the truth. You know, what something they watched. They were told a story and they believe that is the version of the story. And then I have to kind of like, if I know what... I don't have a specific for instance here, but you know, we'll make sure they understand that, well, it's not exactly how it goes, or, you know, try to make them understand that. But because a person is entertaining and has a, you know, personality that people can identify with, that buys them some credibility because they look trustworthy, or they have made me laugh. Honestly, you made me laugh. Mm-hmm. So now I believe you, what you say. Now this can go into like a deeper topic with tool reviews where you're really trusting someone because it's not just that you're learning something from them. Now you might spend money on a thing that they recommended. And I think we confuse that all the time now with someone just being entertaining and interesting and that buying some level psychologically of credibility that makes it, you know, I could believe what this person says. And in some cases, it may, maybe that credibility is unearned. Maybe it's not. I'm not here to judge anyone in particular. But that is an interesting thing to watch. And it's also something that I clearly benefit from. I've talked enough and have made enough content and hopefully have not steered people wrong that I built that credibility. But a lot of it really just comes from like, maybe they like me. Maybe I was interesting enough and I've been around long enough. Does that necessarily mean that I'm the most credible person out there from a woodworking perspective? Heck no, there's people who are woodworking circles around me. But I guess I'm a known quantity at this point. But it's hard to knock these people who are new, right? Because that, you know, we were there too.
Yeah,
at a point.
But I think ultimately, you know, that over time, it weeds out the people that truly are doing, you know, bad stuff. I don't know how else to characterize that, you know, truly are just playing the game.
It'll catch up,
you know, and hey, this got a lot of views, so I'm going to do the same topic. I think over time, you're either adding value, and if what you're doing is entertaining, and I think woodworking is where we can kind of get a little bit more granular on this, because ultimately we are trying to teach somebody how to do something. So if somebody then goes into their mm-hmm. shop and they totally fail at it, or they don't understand what to do, or they can't use your instructions, then they go, well, all right, you know, I'm not really sure. So having an open mind, maybe they go back to that person and say, hey, I tried to do this, but it didn't work out. And if that person never responds in the comments or is completely inaccessible, or they don't help them get any further, then maybe that person kind of goes down a notch and they go looking for that same topic from someone else. And then they talk to them and maybe they have success talking to this other person or watching this other person do it. So eventually kind of, I hate to use the expression, but the cream rises to the top, and, or more importantly, people just lose interest on both sides, watching and creating. And people start to fall away.
See, I say maybe to that, because there are so many people who are watching who are actually not that interested to go out and test this advice. Yeah. They're watching because this is entertaining, it's interesting, and they have no reason to test it. So that's the lion's share of the viewership. It's a very small percentage that's actually saying, hey, this ding dong recommended this tool. I bought that tool. It doesn't work as they perform. Now this person lost trust points with me. That's a very small number of people. I think the vast majority are just there to watch it and they move on with their life and they go, aha, that's a great video. And they actually do trust this person. They'll even regurgitate the crap that person says because they do have that trust built, but it may never come out because the person who's regurgitating it is not actually doing. They're just watching. Mm-hmm. You know, and they think that they, I mean, look at my TikTok feed is a great example of people who are just regurgitating crap that some other person said that they know nothing about, but they think they do because they just watched a video.
Did you know
it.
That you can use you water know what I mean? So it's, to accelerate CA glue?
Works. You know, we should probably talk about that. You guys want to talk? Well, here's another good one. Somebody sent me this on Instagram. Fantastic video. It's this lady who's like one of those, she doesn't want any harsh chemicals in her kitchen type all natural crunchy people. And she has wooden spoons and utensils. And she's showing people how if you take your old kitchen utensils and you boil them and you're going to disinfect them by doing this. So she puts them in boiling water. She goes, here's what it looks like after 5 minutes. Here's what it looks like after 10 minutes. And here it is after 20 minutes. And the water's discolored. And she's like, and that's just all of the food oils and the bacteria. Oh, gross. And I'm just like, oh, Jesus, you're a moron. You're such an idiot.
And the tannins.
And the problem is, you could put raw wood in a boiling pot of water and it's going to color the water. That's
get all the juices, all the wood juices.
Out like everything there. That's not clear is bacteria. Right. Like, so,
wow.
That's racist, the whole premise. The whole premise is completely flawed, but it wasn't even so much the woman's video that was problematic for me. It was the comment section.
Oh Lord.
The comment it's section
always,
going,
always the comments.
Husbands tagging wives tagging husbands. Hey, we need to do this. We should do this. Shouldn't we do this? Oh, we should do this. Look, oh my God, I never knew.
It's like wood soup.
but it's
they're making stock.
It's bad information. It's bad advice, but it is from a source that is appearing to be credible. And that's super problematic. Mm. I don't know what you do about that. I just hope people like our kids, let's say, you know, Matt, hopefully we're teaching our kids over time to have a certain level of apprehension and filtering that has to go on. And I think even older woodworkers who are doing this, you search for a topic. I hope you don't just find the first video that comes up and go, that's the way to do it. Okay, I got my info. You got to look around a little bit and maybe go to the videos that aren't as polished. And sometimes you'll find that that's actually, like Shannon was saying, the people who don't necessarily have the best presentation skills actually have the best information.
You know, so you may need to dig deeper. Brought me up as you talk about people that aren't polished with the old videos. Yeah, that's me.
You're the best. You do a traveling show in the summertime at the, you know, the woodworking club.
I've got some really good 320p videos out there.
Yeah. So Matt, you've been quiet. What are your thoughts here?
Unfortunately, I think it kind of goes back to the person that's actually making these videos to self-regulate in a sense. I mean, obviously I can really only speak from my own experience, but when I started, it wasn't like, I know all this stuff. It was my mentality with my presentation was like, I know all this stuff. I know the right way of doing this. And what I say is like gospel. It's not, I didn't try and like pose my presentation in that way. I definitely try to pose it as like, this is my life experience. This is kind of where I'm at. Here's the things that I don't know. Like if I don't know something, I'm pretty upfront within the videos. Like I don't really do this. This is literally my first time doing this. Let's see how this goes.
Or if you make a mistake, it shows up.
Absolutely. I'll show that. So it really goes back to the presenter more than anything. But kind of going back to the original topic, yes. I mean, like a lot of the topics that I did early on and still now, it's been like, okay, there's like 800 videos about this, but people want to hear me do it or see my presentation of how this is done because they relate better to my way of explaining things than someone else. So yes, I'm regurgitating things that I've seen, but I'm trying to put my own special production spin on it to make it more me, I guess.
Well, I also think that there's a bit of fallacy in the idea that you have to have done something 100 times in order to be able to talk about it. Like, how many bandsaw mills have you built, Matt?
Two.
That's about two more than just about everybody else out there. Certainly one more than the experts in the market. You know, it's not a matter of like, how many mortise and tenons have I cut? I've cut a lot, but you know, there's 1,001 ways to do it. So I've built one sideboard, you know, so am I an expert? Can I do a video on building a sideboard? I think so, because it's still mortise and tenon joinery and panel joints and maybe a dovetail here and there. And it's still woodworking, you know, the project itself, you don't have to have made a whole bunch of them, you know, a whole bunch of times.
I remember back when I first started this stuff, I would hold the opinion that a new person who just learned a thing and like that light bulb went off and you got it, like you understand it, you can now execute it because you understand it completely. A person in that mental state might actually be at the best point to explain something. And that was kind of like a logic that I used with my early videos. Was I just like recently in the last year or two learned these things? I'm in a good position to tell you how my brain saw this when I first confronted this information. Right. And I think you lose that over time. And that actually has played out and held true. I will watch someone make a beginner focused presentation and just nail it, like everything you could possibly imagine. I'm looking at it going now where I am in my career now going, I'd have a real hard time breaking that down to that level at this point because I've lost that.
You're so far from the beginning now.
Yeah, like, I take it for granted.
The freshness of the concept.
Yeah, so there's definitely value, but I think Shannon, you're absolutely right. Or it was Matt who said this. You're being honest about your position in all of this. And what Shannon had said before about blogging, right? Blogging was like journaling. And journaling, you know, is obviously just like, here's what happened. Here's how it happened. Here's why it happened. Journaling and the blogging sort of grew into this production of video content. And that same mentality came with us. We were saying, no, I'm not saying that this is the end all be all. You want that, go to Fine Woodworking. What I'm telling you is this is my personal adventure and you can come with me on that journey. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we approached those early videos. But now everything's gotten so much better quality, you know, the content quality, and the people who just have really interesting, compelling personalities are out there talking about this stuff. They could probably talk about any topic and BS their way through it, and we'd believe them because they're good at what they do. It's just, it's changed so much over that time.
I've built my career on that ability.
I've always said that about you.
Absolutely.
I can listen to Shannon talk about it.
I think Matt.
I think Matt nailed it once a month.
The self-regulation side of things. I mean, we talk about imposter syndrome, and I know a lot of us have felt that from time to time. And I remember early on when there wasn't a lot of white noise. You know, if you put out a video, like the whole community watched it because there was only 300 of us.
Because there weren't that many of you.
and if you got something wrong, you know. So rather than kind of coming, hey, look, I know everything. I'm the expert on this. You would be very clear and say, look, I haven't done this a bunch, but here's what I've learned. Like Mark was saying, you know, just now, you know, and I'm excited about it. And that enthusiasm was compelling, and that, you know, drove people to either try it or to watch something else. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I think what's cool about phrasing it that way is you kind of open the audience to making it more of a two-way street versus just like one directional feed of information. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you actually get a lot of great feedback from the people that may have more experience than you, that maybe tried different ways of doing things. And you're like, oh, that makes a lot more sense. So you actually get to tap into like the knowledge and information in the audience, as well as being able to, you know, just put your own ideas out there. Yeah. But then in the future, you can also relate back to, oh, I have all these comments come in as we talk about this topic again. Let me present some more different views or different ideas that I didn't previously know because I only had what I had seen.
Yeah. It cuts back on negativity, I think, as well. If you're, you know, for the people who know a little bit more about it than you do and who maybe don't know how to conduct themselves online and, you know, just want to give you crap about it. It's like, well, look, I never said I was, you know, giving you the end all be all resource here. I was telling you, I'm trying to figure this out as I go. People tend to approach it like, oh, okay, well, maybe try this next time. You know, like it just changes the personality and the mood.
Agreed.
A little bit. Well, and here's some advice. If you're going to copy someone on like finishing technique, at least do what Matt did and wait a few years, you know, before you do that. Because, you know, just out of respect, I mean, it's not too much to ask, is it? Yeah. Well, here's the funny fact. Here's the funny thing about that
equation, Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no respect. Actually, that was back when I did respect you. Never mind.
Yeah, not anymore. I lost that years ago.
Yeah, that's gone.
I mean, if this tongue oil citrus solvent thing was done that way, you never know, right? People can come up with unique ideas or semi-unique ideas at the same time. That does happen. But if it truly did happen, then that guy's just a turd burger. But let's keep in mind that I didn't invent that. That was something that came from... What? I know it's surprising. I also here's another one. I didn't invent the cutting board. So I'm going to disappoint some people.
I don't believe that for one minute.
Really going to disappoint some people.
You should boil those too with your wooden spoons.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely should.
And the lady also goes, well, just as an example to show you how well this works, here's a spoon that I put in the dishwasher and look, there's still staining on it. I'm like, oh God. Oh, it hurts. Oh, I hate you so much. terrible.
I want to go to her kitchen with like a steam bending form and just take all of her spoons and bend them into weird shapes.
Can you bend her lip shut? How about that? That'd be good. Well, being real angry today. Well, you know what? You know who's got a lot of credibility?
Gonna go right to that.
As a blue verified sticker, check mark, whatever.
They got a lot of credibility with me. As far as I'm concerned, that's Rockler. Our friends over at Rockler create the perfect cabinet, work table, or shop cart system for your workshop. You guys have ever played with this? The Rocksteady kits that they have on the site? Pretty good stuff.
Yes, I have one.
They're Rocksteady.
It's assembled. It's right there.
I like these. These are pretty slick.
There you go. Yeah, it's fantastic stuff. The Rocksteady shop stand kits from Rockler feature strong, heavy-duty gauge steel construction and pre-drilled holes for easy assembly and accessorizing. These are the best workshop stands in the business. Mix and match shop stand dimensions to suit your needs. Choose from one of Rockler's complete kits or select individual shop stand components and accessories. Rockler's Rocksteady shop stand configurator Oh, that thing's so fun. You got to go play with it. It makes it easy to design and shop for the perfect custom workshop stand. And we'll put a link there in the show notes. At least just go have fun with the configurator. Because sometimes, some of this stuff you could just build it, but with the price of plywood and stuff these days, you got to be thinking about other options. And this configurator is a fun tool to play with. So go check it out over at rocklure.com. I'll just give you the link here real quick. It's shop-stand-configurator.
And that free shipping code, boom, baby. It works on that. Because
there you go.
There'll be some expensive shipping by the time you configure your shop.
You'll want that. And again, they're not kidding when they say like how heavy duty the materials are. They are heavy duty. It's a real good quality stuff. I've got the roll around. I think it's under the Rocksteady, name, but it's the roll around clamp stand.
The cart thing?
Mm-hmm. The clamp cart.
Clamp stand?
Well, and I also have the plywood cart thing. I think that's all under that same umbrella. What?
I know what you have. You even know what you have.
I don't know. I don't know what I have. I've been trying to figure it out for years.
Hopefully it's not
contagious. All right. So we do have a couple of questions. Questions to get through here. What's this first one from Jonathan? Why did I put Matt's name on that?
I don't know.
I'm clicking a button. You're not reading anything. Okay, here we go.
Hey, Mark, Shannon, and Matt. Jonathan from New Brighton, Minnesota calling in, and I wanted to ask about pore filling. Specifically, kind of what works well, what doesn't work well, kind of what you've used and your experiences with that. Shannon, you mentioned using Z-Poxy many episodes ago, and I never heard an update on that about do you like it, do you not, kind of what are your experiences? I know some people use 4F pumice, some people do a wet sand with BLO, and I'm working a lot with ash and oak and just wanted to see kind of how that would affect my projects and how that would make things look to have a smoother, less kind of bumpy, pore-filled surface. So thanks much. Keep up the good work. And thanks for not quitting or knitting.
All right. Thanks, Jonathan. Shannon, you got some feedback on that?
I have a box of Z-Poxy.
I
quite enjoyed it. It kind of depends upon the wood that you're pore filling. You know, if it's got big, wide open pores, the epoxy fillers fill really fast. It was a one application, one coat thing. I was working with chestnut and tamo ash, so very wide open pores. And you use the, it's got like the little squeegee things that comes with it. So you basically just dump it on and squeegee it around the surface across the grain and work it into the pores. That was one application, came back the next day and sanded it back. You know, it kind of gives you that, as you sand it, you get that kind of white scuffed surface. Once that goes away, you're good to go. So I've done pore filling like in the pumice side of things, like pumice rotten stone thing. That takes for flipping ever.
It's a lot of work.
And you have to lock it in because there's no binder, you know? So then you're putting like shellac in there to lock that pumice in place, or you're just going to start pulling it out of the pores. And you have to be really careful when you're applying the shellac because you could, you know, if you brush it too much, you'll pour the pumice right out of the pores. So that would be good for something like mahogany that's got really, really small pores. Actually, I don't think pumice and rotten stone is good for anything. It's the way they did it. That
it's good for a chapter in an old
basically,
book
is what it's good for. Worked great for Goddard and Townsend, and that was 300 years ago. 300? I don't know what year it is.
Yeah,
300 years ago. I tried. What year is it? I also tried Solarez, which was a pore filler UV cure. That was similar to the epoxy. It wasn't as thick. So I think if I were doing something like oak, I would probably need to do multiple applications, but who cares? Because like there's no dry time. It's squeegee it on and just with the UV thing and put on another coat. That was given to me by a luthier customer, a professional guitar maker over on the Eastern Shore. And that's what they use constantly for like 6 and 7 pore fillings on like the backs of guitars and things like that. That was super cool. It was also just fun. You know, it gets a little UV light, you know, plugged in and got myself a tan in between. It was awesome. So,
it was good.
That's it from one extreme to the other, from UV cured epoxy to pumice and rotten stone. That's been my pore filling experience.
I've used a TimberMate a lot. That's the it's just a wood filler, but you can dilute it down to use it as a pore filler. And I've done that in a couple of videos. That's good to use if I want the pores to not only be filled, but kind of disappear. You use a clear pore filler, you still see those pores. If you use a colored pore filler, it kind of just tones down the background. You don't see the pores as much. And it just, depending on the species, you may or may not want that. So that's something to keep in mind. But TimberMate works great.
I've done the slurry, or like it's the wet sanding method.
Ah, yes.
Which, I don't know. It's definitely work. I think that, honestly, the hardest part about that is you need like the fine sawdust from your sander. And as soon as you like make the switch to a dust extractor, like you don't have the little bag on the back of your sander to like dump on the surface.
Right.
So getting the sawdust is kind of the hard part with that, but it's not that bad once if you have enough sawdust.
Yeah.
To make it work. Because you're not really trying to sand the surface to make sawdust.
Yeah.
You're supposed to bring sawdust into it. And then it's more like just kind of smearing it around. Mm.
It's really such a dumb problem for a woodworker to have, right? Like, I don't have any sawdust because it's all collected.
You know, it's all in this big giant bag mixed with everything else I sucked up.
So then you just grab a board and you're just sanding it down to get the dust.
Yep.
Look, I'm only saying this because I've been here.
I would have to do that. I don't actually have anything that creates that fine of dust in my shop anymore.
Yeah, Shannon's even worse.
I really don't have
sawdust. You just put sand board to make shavings.
You just need a blender. You keep the shavings, put the shavings in a blender.
Yeah. A little bit of vodka, you're good to go.
Or you can boil them. Yeah. And strain and press them.
Yeah. Boil them. Get that bacteria out of there.
Nice.
All right, Shannon.
Let's move on with John's question.
The next one.
He says, John with the Southern drawl here again. He doesn't want me to read this with the Southern drawl, does he? Because that would not go well. I'd end up sounding like Foghorn Leghorn, and that would be many other issues that would come out of that. So
you're gonna sound like Charles
Brock. You haven't
Brock.
Offended anyone in a while, Shannon. So let's
true.
Go for
that's
it.
True. let's see. I was busy walking my newborn with a leash.
There, ding. There it is. Shannon's offense of the quarter.
This leash demeans us both. So I'm a stay-at-home dad. I also share custody of my six-year-old. I love my family, but how in the world do I make time to create things I want to make as well as products to sell? My garage is so close, but it feels worlds away. My baby goes to sleep at 7, and the garage is too close to his bedroom. Thoughts? Wow. This is an open-ended question.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I can tell you, I mean, I think people have this problem even if they're not worried about waking up the kids. You know, life is busy, getting time in the shop. I think what I have had success with, and what I've actually had a lot of success in talking to my students about, is kind of getting organized and planning your shop time, even going so far as scheduling your shop time. You know, I'm going to be working in the shop from this time to this time, and don't overlook the 10-minute shop session. You can get a lot done in the mm-hmm. shop in 10 minutes if you know what it is you're going to do. You know, if you just
and you stay off YouTube.
Yeah, there's that. If you just walk into the shop and say, I'm going to work on this project, but you don't know what you're going to do for that project, you can waste 10 minutes like that, just mm-hmm. kind of walking around the for shop sure. and putting on the shop apron and, you know, just messing around with stuff. But if you know, you know, I've got a 15-minute session tomorrow and I need to cut the mortise and tenons for that face frame. So I'm going to cut 2 mortise and tenons. You go into the shop, you can get 2 mortise and tenons cut. I don't know, care what your method is in 10 minutes. And say you get it done faster than that. If you have a list, literally a checklist of the different steps, you actually can get a heck of a lot done. And it allows you, especially in this situation with John, where, you know, he's a stay-at-home dad. There's probably quite a bit of time when maybe he could get away for 5 minutes, but he's got to be immediately available to run back in the house, you know, when somebody cries or mm-hmm. doorbell rings or something, you know, the baby monitor goes off. So being hyper, hyper focused and organized. And I will often tell people to kind of take that project and break it down to steps that you can measure by time. And if you look at that step and go, I don't know how long that's going to take, break it down further. You know, if the step is dovetail a drawer and you're like, I don't know, that could take me an hour. So this sounds kind of silly, but actually writing it down, saying cut the half blinds on the front corner, you know, okay, I have a better idea of how long that's going to take. Plus there's that, like, everybody's got that like deep seated satisfaction that comes from checking a box on a checklist, actually having physical mm-hmm. checklist.
Lists are great.
And being able to, okay, I got 5 minutes of shop time, and being able to check 2 boxes when you walk out of the shop, you feel fulfilled and you feel excited mm-hmm. to go into the shop again, because you know the next time you go in, you're going to do those next 2 check boxes. So this has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not you're going to wake the baby or not. This is just about being super efficient with your time and being really organized with what it is you're actually going to do in the shop. Then you can tackle the question of how do I keep from waking the baby? You know, does this particular exercise make a lot of noise? More importantly, if I'm making a lot of noise and it's not waking the child, can I hear the child if the child has problems? Like if the child starts screaming, am I going to be able to hear that while I've got my headphones on and their dust collector blaring? Those are the things you can say, okay, well, I can only do those tasks when, you know, he's at joint custody, when I'm not on custody duty that day or something like that. So I think the bigger question is not, am I going to wake the child? It's how you organize your shop time. Focus on that first. And I think the other part of the question maybe will answer itself. Now, for somebody who doesn't have kids, let me pass over to people who have kids. Speaking of credibility.
Sounds like you just learned about this, Shannon. Yeah. You want to talk more about it?
He's new to it, yeah.
I know for me, like I always try to encourage people to just don't be afraid to take some time away. There are certain phases in your kids' lives where it's just not going to work. It's not going to be convenient. There's no good that comes of it. I can tell you from my own experience, maybe it's a personality flaw, but if I get my sights set, I got my checklist that Shannon mentioned, and I got a thing I want to get done on that checklist, and I start it, and babies are dumb. They cry for no reason. And even after you put them down 2 seconds later, they cry. So if I got started on something and then got interrupted, if that was my 5 minutes and I still couldn't get that 5 minutes done, it actually makes me a worse parent because I go back in the house, I got a chip on my shoulder. I can bring the whole house down with a bad attitude that way. So there are times where it's just better not to even think about it. Go into research mode, go into design mode, get it SketchUp on a laptop, on a dining room table. You got 10, 15 minutes, design something, start, you know, read something, watch a video about something, like go into research mode to kind of get your arsenal of tools and information. So that even the next time you're in the shop, you've got more, knowledge behind you. I just think it's okay to take a break, especially when you've got a young one that's that little. And then later, the opportunities will present themselves a little bit more. Like Shannon said, they'll get to a point where if there's a problem, they can come get you. You could have monitors and stuff in the shop that will let you know what's going on out there. You could check in every once in a while. I certainly have done woodworking with a baby monitor in the shop many times. So nothing wrong with that. But I think right now, take it easy on yourself, man. You don't have, like, if you're a stay-at-home dad and you don't need the income from the products you make, wouldn't really be fussing with it too much right now. I would give it some time. What about you, Matt?
As someone who has children and has gone through this.
That's why we ask you.
When I was a stay-at-home dad when I started the business and when JR was born. Mm-hmm. And
you still
are. Silence.
You still are a stay-at-home dad.
I guess I do stay here.
That's what I'm saying. Come on. Calling a spade a spade. Your wife is the one that goes out to work.
She works right behind me right there.
No, desk. It still counts more than yours does.
The prop desk. anyway.
Go ahead.
As someone who has gone through this, if you have a newborn, that was the time to get your shop time in because as soon as that person gets actually mobile, it's kind of over. So the amount of time that I have spent in the shop with the baby monitor, you know, newborns, they sleep all the time, like all the time. Like most of them.
Some
they sleep
them.
A lot.
Not mine.
So like,
except when you try to sleep, right?
What? Yeah. What? Except, well, yes, that's different. So you sleep when the baby sleeps. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. You kind of learn if you're kind of on your own with that. But the baby monitor in the shop. So I just keep an eye on it. Like, if the baby's crying or screaming or moving around, like you can see that on the monitor. If you wanted to, you could plug your headphones into the monitor and listen if you wanted to do that too. If they're awake though, like they don't move. So like if you're doing something that's quiet and that you can like do, like you want to set up your table saw for the tenon you're going to cut tomorrow, you can do that. You're just like swapping blades. Maybe you're putting a dado stack in. You can do that kind of stuff. If for the beginning of the project, you can do all your lumber selection layout and all of that kind of fun, quieter type of stuff. If you do some more hybrid woodworking type of stuff and you want to do some like hand cut dovetails, you can do that with the baby in the room. I did that a lot. So I don't think it's necessarily like baby's here, I can't do anything. You can still do it. I got one of those, whatchamacallit, the things you wear the baby. I did that the too.
Baby Bjorn, those little strap things. Yeah.
It does. That does restrict you to what you can do, but at least they're like, they're closer to you and you can make them happy versus like sitting them like on the, we had a boppy.
They get,
he just sat.
Cute little shavings on their head.
Yeah. Here's some shavings. Just give them a toy to play with. Mm-hmm. Like they're babies. Like they're just like anything is a toy, anything to play with. When they got older, we had like this little chair. So like rocking chair thing that you could like clip them into. And Jerry would just sit there and watch me work in his little chair. So it's like we're hanging out doing stuff. And that was honestly the easiest part. As soon as he got to the point where he was like 9 months old and could roll or escape, at 11 months he was walking.
That's
like
a moving target.
Done at that point.
It's over.
So then you got to play a different strategy.
Yeah.
But with a newborn, I think you have a lot more flexibility of what you can do. And one of the things that we did, at least, was we kind of encouraged the idea that babies don't need quiet to sleep.
I was going to touch on that.
We trained them to sleep with noise and distractions. So when JR was born, I was doing the flooring in our old house, and I would put him in the kitchen in the next room, and I would go around on my hands and knees with my orbital sander, because I'm that kind of person. And I sanded the whole floor with him there, and he slept through all the sanding. So like, and even when people were over, we weren't like, oh, be quiet, the baby's sleeping.
Did you
like,
do you give him baby's first respirator when you did that?
I didn't, no. I gave him babies in a different room.
Babies in a different room. Okay, just checking.
And trusted Festool. Trusted the dust extractor.
There you go.
Baby's first isotunes.
Real good point there.
Yes. Baby's first isotunes, yes. The muffs on.
Did he complain about the audio quality, too? At a certain age,
like when he was like maybe 3 or 4, he realized that my muffs had the music,
nice,
or the radio on it. So you just like turn it on and listen to the music.
Nice.
So I'm like, okay, cool. So you can wear hearing protection. So I can, mm-hmm, do more things, because he's content wearing hearing protection. So now I can make a little more noise. I'm not doing crazy.
Yeah.
But at least like I can do some hammering, or maybe like use a jigsaw or something when he's like over on the other side of the shop or something.
You bring up a real good point, because thinking back to when my kids were little, you know, who doesn't care if your babies are napping? The Air Force. And when
I was going to say grandparents, nice, but
them too.
That's good too.
When we were in Arizona, right by Luke Air Force Base, this Air Force Base would have flyovers constantly. And we're like, how are we going to have a kid here? They're just going to wake up every... No, they don't. They get used to it. No. So I think one of the things you may try, first of all, get them a white noise machine. White noise, not, and don't get the ones that like play a track. Get the ones that are actually like a fan built into just a little box.
Go to lumberupdate.com and hit play.
Yes, that would work perfectly. Just let the archive go. But if you get a white noise machine in there, I think you would be surprised, unless you are like banging things with a hammer and changing the noise as you go. A lot of things like the table saw, even making cuts at the table saw, a dust collector, that actually just from a distance is white noise to a kid. So I would, before they get used to peace and quiet, get them, like Matt said, get them used to some activity and some noise around you, because you might actually be able to do a lot more in there than you realize, as long as the kid just gets used to it, and add that white noise machine. And that helps to kind of soften everything that's in the distance. So that might be something to look into. All right.
Here we go.
Do we have another one here? Okay. Yeah. One more and we'll get out of here. Eric wrote in, he says, if a finish is applied to only one side of a board, does that change the rate of absolution of moisture?
So is the finish sinful? Is that what we're saying?
Yes. something about that was a little off.
You've been absolved of moisture.
Yes. Okay. Is it more likely to cup or bow? Thanks for quitting, then unquitting, and then quitting again, and one more unquitting. So I guess I kind of put this in here just to kind of do a quick survey with us. Have you guys ever had any luck or bad luck just finishing one side of a board? Did you see a resulting problem doing that?
If the board was completely free, like a board, like laying on my bench, yes.
Just a panel.
Yeah, it will cup, right. Because you're introducing moisture to one side. I'm not sure, mm-hmm, if he's asking, does it change like over time? Like, you know, will it move less seasonally because there's finish on one side of the board? So like, you know, if you finish the top, well, I think the answer is still yes. The finish does offer a bit of a barrier to moisture exchange. But yeah.
It slows
but like
down.
if it's a tabletop.
But that's that, and that's the heart of the
you
problem.
Know, if it's a tabletop that's screwed down to a base or something like that, no.
Maybe
probably
not
going to see
an issue.
Much, no.
Yeah. But ultimately, I think that's why the standard classic practice is to finish both sides. I don't think you need to finish both sides to the same extent.
It don't got to be pretty.
It don't got to be pretty. And you don't have to put as many coats. You just kind of want it sealed and you should be okay. But I do think you could run into problems. Well, not could. You will run into problems if you make a habit of finishing boards just on one side. Mm-hmm. Especially if it's not locked down within a bigger project, like a panel to a frame and panel side.
The thicker the board, the less an issue it's going to be. Go to the extreme and look at veneer. You know, like I've got a video in the editor right now where I did some marquetry in it, and I didn't want to put glue because I was pressing it in the bag. I didn't want to put glue on both faces of the veneer, so I had to put it on one face, quickly get it on the board, get a batten on or a platen on top of it, and in like the
that could
the
be
3 seconds, it, you know, I had this old potato chip, and I'm trying to flatten them down and get the batten in. As I flatten one down, another one's curling. You know, that was crazy. But if it was an 8-quarter board, you know, you may not see much movement.
Cool. All right, I think that's going to do it for us today. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com, use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49, and remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Yay, money. Rockler money. Good topics this week. I would definitely love to hear from people about the credibility issue. I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there who, whether it's woodworking or not, are in a position where they've been forced to give an opinion or create a video or do something like that, and I've always felt like I shouldn't be doing this. And there may be people out there who are like, yeah, I don't give a crap. I'm going to do it anyway because it's all about the sponsors.
Giving them views,
it's
baby.
All about those free tools. So let us know what your thoughts are on the whole credibility issue. And certainly if you have advice for woodworking with a child in the room, we want to hear that too. So go to woodtalkshow.com. Fill out the little contact form there or just send us an email. That works too. Woodtalkshow@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram. We are what? What's our handle there? Wood Talk Show.
I don't know.
Wood Talk
Margaret
Show. I don't know. Wood Talk Show. Of course, you can.
Ask Margaret. She'll let us know.
Just look up Margaret. But you can also find us and pay attention to us and feed our narcissism at Matt Cremona, at Wood Whisper, and at Renaissance Woodworker. Make us feel credible.
Yeah, I guess so. Oh, okay. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. And we will catch you next
time. Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye to you.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.